Continuing in Mitzvah Reish Tzadiches 298, not to do Malacha on the first day of Pesach, and we're discussing, in general, the laws of doing Malacha on Yontif. So there's another aspect of Hilchos Yontif that's given a lot of attention in Chazal, in Maseches Beitza, or Maseches Yontif, which is the issue of Hachana, that it says in the Torah, Ve'ichinu es asher yaviyu, that they have to prepare that which they bring, that you're not allowed to just go ahead and eat things on Yontif, even though there is a heter v'chol nefesh. It has to be something that's prepared. It has to be something that you have considered to be food before Yontif.
You're not allowed to? Wouldn't that say fruit?
Oh, so fruit, if you have a fruit that's sitting around in Erev Yontif, so that's something that's automatically considered to be food.
Vegetables.
Right. Fruit, vegetables, things, prepared meat, slaughtered meats, all these things, you have them Erev Yontif, or there's an animal that you've been meaning to shecht for a long time. You have a cow in your backyard, so that's prepared. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to shecht that on Yontif, but there are things that are...
How is that prepared?
It's not the English word prepare doesn't adequately convey the exact halachic...
Ready for use.
I mean, clearly you can't eat or prepare...
It means something that you had in mind, even if you're not actively thinking, cow, cow, I want to eat the cow, I want to eat the cow, I want to eat this. Even if you're not thinking that over and over, it's just something that's automatically considered to be food on Erev Yontif, that's all okay. We're talking about things that you can't even think in a roundabout way would be consumed on Yontif, which is part of the problem of a wild animal entrapping. That's part of the problem with that. Like a wild animal entrapping, you didn't have in mind that was going to be food on Erev Yontif. But the famous example this is the first Mishnah Maseches Beitza, which is why Maseches Yontif is called Maseches Beitza a lot of the time. Because the first word is Beitza Shenolda B'Yontif, that if an egg was born... Not born, laid, we say in English, but in Hebrew it's nolda. That if an egg was laid on Yontif, so you're not allowed to eat it. V'chein ma she'amru v'isr hachana, de'in Yontif mechin l'shabbis v'lo Shabbos l'Yontif. That Shabbos and Yontif cannot prepare for each other. So in other words, if you have 2 days in a row, you have a Yontif and a Shabbos, as we will have this year many times... Although in the times of, the early Chazal, it was just whenever the one day of Yontif happened to fall out on a Friday or a Sunday. Okay. But if something, in other words, you have 2 days in a row. So if something was prepared on the first day, it cannot be eaten on the second day. It has to be prepared on a weekday. It cannot be prepared on a holy day for another holy day. Velo mishtakcha, so different examples of this. Velo mishtakcha, isra chana midoraisa ledaiti. I said, but even though there's a lot of examples of this, there's only one thing which is an example deoraisa of the requirement of hachana. So according to the Sefer Achinuch, which is the sheet of most Rishonim, the principle of hachana is a deoraisa principle, whereas according to the Rambam and a minority of Rishonim, the principle of Hachana, the whole institution, is only the Rabbanan. But the Sefer HaChinuch says that at least this example of the principle of Hachana is the Raisa. Ki Mayin Shaper B'Divrei HaGemara Ki B'Veitza B'Vad. If you look carefully in Maseches Yontif, then the only example is an egg. An egg is something that's totally new. You had no idea it was going to appear before it's actually laid. So therefore, there's no way of you thinking that, oh, this egg is going to be food for me. There's no way of you preparing it before Yontif. It's only on the day itself. Vikari surahu b'shenolda b'yontif shel achar Shabbos, o b'shabbos shel achar Yontif. On a deraisa level, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, the issue is only if, let's say, Friday is Yontif, and... let's say Yontif is on Sunday. So the egg was finished on Sunday inside the chicken, on Shabbos inside the chicken, and then it was laid on Sunday. So really the preparation of this egg was done on Shabbos, and the laying of the egg was done on Yontif. So since the egg was only prepared on It's not even a matter of you thinking about it. It's a matter of even in existence. That's what he says. It's on a, that's the derais aspect of it. That since it was only really in existence on Shabbos, so you're not allowed to eat it on Yontif either, because the day of Shabbos, something that was prepared for eating on Shabbos, cannot be consumed on Yontif, on the following Yontif, and vice versa. So this is called Hachana de Rabba, because he discusses it in the Gemara. And that's the Darais example of this. V'hada asrina la b'shnol de b'shabes l'yantiv shel acharav, o b'shnol b'yantiv l'shabes acharav, v'chein shnol de b'yantiv atzmo, mi de Rabbanan hu asira. So, for example, if it's born even on the day, we asser that... Right, so we say we asser eggs even if it was born on the Shabbos late, on the Shabbos before Yontif, or if it was born on Yontif itself. So anytime an egg is born on a holy day, basically, you asser the egg because of we're concerned we're going to get confused and we would even be matir an egg that was laid on a Yontif after Shabbos.
How about if you prepare the chicken, you find there's an egg inside?
If there's a chicken and you find that's an egg inside, so it's part of the chicken.
It wasn't laid.
Right, it's part of the chicken.
Yeah.
The question is, if it's...
It was prepared, it was there.
Oh, but there's different stages of eggs. Different stages of eggs. If you've ever opened up a chicken right after Shechita, and you looked at the oviduct where the eggs go through, so you sometimes see eggs in various stages of development. So the halacha is really that if an egg is not completed, if in other words it's still connected to the chicken's body, there are different stages of development that are discussed in halacha. So if it's still connected to the chicken's body, then that egg is fleishig. That egg is fleishig, and it has to be salted with it. It went to shech the chicken. It has to be salted with the chicken separately, or salted, and it must be cannot be eaten with milk, etc. However, if the egg is fully formed with a shell and everything inside the chicken's body and just hasn't come out yet, so technically that is not fleishig. That's considered to be like an egg that was laid. However, the minhag nowadays is to treat that egg as fleishig anyway. That even a whole egg with a shell that's found inside a chicken after slaughter should be treated as
making the water boil.
No. I didn't say lemaisi. You should not use an electric coffee maker even on Shabbos, even with a timer. It's not gishmak. Not gishmak. It's a zilzul. It's a zilzul of Shabbos. It's a zilzul of Shabbos. But brewing, if you have boiled water from before Shabbos, so. There's a big tzad to say that you're allowed to make fresh brewed coffee with the filter thingy on Shabbos.
Because basically the idea being that the coffee,
the Mishnah. First of all,
the coffee's roasted.
Water stays boiled.
Yeah,
right.
But if you're
not talking about it became cold,
but also the coffee,
right?
The coffee's
right.
Roasted.
So the coffee's already roasted, and although we're machmir. We are not allowed to, we Ashkenazim especially, are not allowed to cook things in water on Shabbos that have already been roasted. You're only allowed to reheat things on Shabbos that have been in water that have already been boiled. And you're only allowed to, for example, you could put a roasted coffee bean, on a hot frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
Not on the fire, obviously, but on a hot frying pan, because that would be roasting. That would be roasting after roasting,
right.
So that's okay. But different cooking methods would be a problem. But here it's ameliorated because you, especially if you pour the water from a kli sheni,
yeah.
So even though if the coffee beans were raw, we might be machmir even on the pouring from the kli sheni, if the water were still very hot. It's the whole shayla of making tea on Shabbos, not getting into that now. But if the coffee beans are roasted, so we don't go so far with our chumrah that we combine our chumras about kli sheni and kli shlishi with the chumrah of yesh bishal achar tzliya, that we
right.
consider there is roasting, there's cooking after roasting. So if you put the ground coffee beans in a filter on top of, with the little plastic thingy that sits on top of the cup, and then you pour your hot water inside, especially from a cliche, maybe, then the water, the Mishnah says in Maseches Shabbos that you're allowed to pour water through a strainer that contains grape sediment in order to extract the flavor from the grapes.
All right, that sounds
so
good.
It seems like an analogous case. The idea is this is not a problem of the prohibition of borer or straining on Shabbos because basically you get a liquid you're being poured and a liquid is being going in the cup. There's no tarovis here of water and beans that you're now separating. It goes straight from liquid form when you're pouring it to liquid in the cup that's just absorbed the taste of the
it's
beans.
It's like lemon, where the juice goes from the lemon to the sugar.
It's different principles, but yes, it's so there is a big tzad to say that one is allowed to make coffee in fresh on Shabbos with a filter thingy. French press, maybe
as long
not.
As you're using
French press, you're not, because there's a mixture of water and beans, then you're separating
right,
it out.
Actually, yeah. There's actually the latest issue of Hakira.
Yeah.
There's an article, in fact, about coffee, chocolate, and tea. So, yeah, right. And with the introduction, and then how, because they became so immensely popular, even necessary, as it were. That also they had to find a lot of heterim. Go ahead and say, oh, okay, yeah, you can have a cup of coffee with sugar before you daven and things like that. Because also a question of can you go into a coffee shop to recruit for a minion or something like that? Whereas coffee shops are considered to be, like bars, I guess, originally.
Right, that's why some poskim say that you're not allowed to go drink in Starbucks. There's a prohibition that you're not allowed to go into a non-Jewish bar and drink there, although we discussed the exact parameters in a recent share. But it says, so basically coffee is considered nowadays a social beverage like an alcoholic beverage, so therefore we should apply the principle to a non-Jewish coffee house as well.
Yeah, except the trouble is with bars, there's something called the beer goggles. Your judgment gets clouded that way.
That's not the normatively accepted approach, but nevertheless, there are people who say
the other way around. You should be able to see more clearly what you should and shouldn't do when you have cups of coffee.
Well, do you get more energized? I don't know. Okay. But on Yontif, yes.
So you can daven.
The Mormons won't let you do it.
Yeah, but on Yontif, there are many more heterim regarding the preparation of coffee and tea, obviously. Fine. It's all because you might get confused and be matter an egg that was laid on Yontif that fell after Shabbos. That he says in his, he wrote a commentary on Maseches Beitza, and he went into great detail about the laws of Hachana and an egg that was laid on Yontif, but he's not going to go into great detail now.
Sefer Chinuch
right.
We don't have it.
The question is that if the Sefer Chinuch was written by the Ra'ah, which probably wasn't, but that's what was classically assumed for a while, so it's interesting that I think the Art Scroll points out that in the commentary of the Ra'ah on Maseches Beitza, there isn't much discussion of this.
Yeah.
What?
The
Ra'ah. The Ra'ah. Rabbi Aaron Halevi, who was a student of the Ramban. V'din machshirei ochel nefesh she'osor la'asoson. That there is a machlokas in the Gemara regarding the concept of machshirei ochel nefesh, which is things that are not directly involved in food preparations, but preparatory steps for the food preparation. Like, for example, sharpening knives, straightening the, like a spit to roast meat if it's bent, things like that are machshirei ochel nefesh, and it's a machlokas, famous machlokas between Reb Yehuda and the Chachamim, if you're allowed to do that on Yontif, exactly, slightly different approaches in the Rishon of exactly when you apply the shita of each one. But the Sefer Chinuch is going with the idea that it's categorically forbidden, that you're not allowed to do machshirei ochel nefesh, any of these things, that we paskin like the Chachamim, that we're not allowed to do anything that's machshirei ochel nefesh on Yontif. It's further a machlokas as to whether this heter, to those who say this heter, applies even to things that was impossible to do before Yontif, or even to apply things that you could have done before Yontif, but you did even today. So, for example, if your knife, if you were shechting so many times that your knife got a pegima in it, a nick in it, So are you allowed to fix that on Yontif according to... So you're if you happen on Yontif, so you're allowed to fix that according to the shita that holds machshir yochol nefesh is allowed. But if you just were too lazy and you didn't sharpen your knife before Yontif, then you're not allowed to... Then according to one approach, you're not allowed to do that on Yontif either. But again, the Sefer Chen is going with the approach that you're never allowed to sharpen a knife or such things on Yontif. Mishum dechsiv, hu levado. It says in the Torah... anything that's ochel nefesh, hu levado, only things that are ochel nefesh, velo machshirah, and not preliminary steps. And the other shita holds, hu levado yaseh lochem, that should be done for you. So anything you need for food preparation should be done on yantiv. So different ways of interpreting this pasuk lead to various conclusions as to whether machshirah ochel nefesh are permissible or not. V'din zimun hagoy b'yantiv she'aser, inviting a goy for a yantiv meal, which is forbidden. D'chsev lachem v'lo lagoyim. So he's conflating two different principles over here. One is that it's an iser d'araisa to cook for a non-Jew on yantiv. Again, remember, technically speaking, d'araisa, you said if you're making a pot of chicken soup, so you can throw in as much as you want, because it's all one action, so there'd be no problem technically adding for a non-Jew in there, because you're allowed to add anyway, even for no reason. But since the pasuk says, lachem, hu levado yaseh lachem, it should be done for you, meaning b'nei Yisrael, that cooking on Yantif. So cooking on Yantif is only allowed to be done for the sake of Jews, and not for the sake of non-Jews. So for example, if a non-Jew came in and requested a cup of coffee, or non-roasted beans, assuming. Okay, or a cup of tea, which is made from raw tea leaves. So one would not be allowed to prepare that on Yontif. Or if you didn't have so much food left over from the Yontif meals, and the non-Jew says, here, can you please just make, it could be easy, just make me an omelet or something like that. So that would be an Isser D'Oraisa to make the omelet for the non-Jew on Yontif, unless, of course, a Jew was eating part of the omelet, yeah?
What do they do at hotels then, on Yontif Pesach, let's say, or Sukkot, where they have a lot of non-Jewish staff who have to eat?
Your issue with the Pesach hotels.
Okay.
They have so many kulas. Wow, you can pick one.
All right. The chef is probably not Jewish. He probably had ovens lit by the mashgiach. So I guess you'd say what? The non-Jewish chef is allowed to go ahead and make, he's allowed to make.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Right. Okay.
That's the idea. Although you could say that all the food is owned by, no, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But they say it's a Jewish establishment, though, so you shouldn't be allowing non-Jews to eat, even if you have a non-Jew to cook there. But you have...
that's why you shouldn't go out to spend shopping.
I mean, that doesn't affect the kashrus of the food.
Right.
I mean, the other things that could affect the kashrus of the food, obviously. But the idea is that because of this idea that you might be so embarrassed, the non-Jew show, you have a non-Jew on Yontif, and the non-Jew says, please make me an omelet. So you'd be very embarrassed to say, sorry, I can't make you an omelet today. What do you mean? You just made this whole meal. You can't make me an omelet? What are you talking about? So that's why the Chazal said that not only are you not allowed to cook for non-Jews directly on Yontif, but one should not invite a non-Jew over on Yontif at all. Yeah?
Okay, here comes the controversial question then. What about a Jew who's not Shomer Shabbos?
A Jew who's not Shomer Shabbos, so the Mishnah Berurah suggests that a Jew who's not Shomer Shabbos should have the status of a Goy in this regard, and that you should not invite a not-from Jew for Yontif either. However, the poskim generally nowadays find that assumption to be very questionable, A, because of as many of them, we assume, hope, have the din of a Tinok Shenishpa, which means that they really don't know any better, so we shouldn't penalize them for it. It doesn't have in other words, really, when a non-Jew has when a Jew has the status of a non-Jew for ritual purposes, it's, when they're Mechal Shabbos, and, they worship Avodah Zarah. So even though, classically, a Jew who's Mechal Shabbos was treated like a Goy for most ritual purposes, so... That would not necessarily apply nowadays, because the people who are nowadays are not doing it because of rebellion. They were just doing it because of how they're used to. Right, they have no clue, and they're just doing it because how they're used to growing up. So that's why. But also, even for a Jew who's slightly more rebellious than what I just described, the principle is somewhat questionable, because
Like off the derech, we're talking about, let's say, someone who...
Right, even someone off the derech, they're still shayach to the mitzvahs of Yantif. You know what I mean? It's not like they're non-Jews. Okay, they don't celebrate these holidays, but these Jews, even if they're not observant, they're required to celebrate these holidays. It's a mitzvah to make them happy. And
but, no. Right, so wait, so I didn't even think of that. So how does the Mishnah Berurah deal with
people
that?
Assume either people disagree with the Mishnah Berurah, or they say the Mishnah Berurah is only talking about not from Jews who are really rebellious.
Oh, interesting.
So for someone who is really rebellious or something, yeah, really off the derech, you know,
yeah.
I mean, how are they supposed to have a Seder?
How are they supposed to stay related to the...
Well, religion? Ask more. What about a non-Jew who's in the process of converting?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They have to experience it. Oh, so this year, if you want to invite a non-Jew for your first Seder, so it's okay. Because first Seder falls... unless we, you know, start being Mekadosh Shel Piyaria, we're planning that the first Seder this upcoming year is going to be on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. So when Yom Tov falls on Shabbos, so this is not a problem, because on Shabbos you're allowed to invite a non-Jew because you can't cook at all.
Anyway.
So there's no, you can't cook for Jews or non-Jews, there's no way of getting confused, so it's permissible. So if you want to invite a goy to your Seder, or, you know, ordinarily that's not necessarily recommended, but somebody who's in the process of converting would be recommended, so one would, every couple, it's pretty common that the Seder falls on Shabbos, so you wait to invite them until such a time as the Seder falls on Shabbos, or they won't have a Seder before they convert, you'll do a model Seder for them. But there's really not a head to... I've heard stories of some poskim relying on extraordinary kulas in order to allow you to invite a non-Jew in the process of converting on Yantif. They do interesting things like it's not your food. You give all the food that the non-Jew is going to eat as a present to the non-Jew before Yantif.
Mm-hmm.
So then when he comes, so the non-Jew is not eating your food. It's not like you're inviting
him
to eat.
But you're cooking his food.
Cooking, you're for sure not. That's the Raisa. You're not allowed to cook. I'm saying food that was either in a pot with a Jew's food before Yantif, or that was cooked before Yantif. So you give it to him before Yantif, and he eats that food. That's his food. You're not inviting him. He's eating only his own food at your table.
All right.
That's one very big kula.
So that's okay. So
that's
that
possibly what they do in the hotels also, yeah. Right.
Right. Of somebody turns up thinking of specific incidents.
Oh.
And so you didn't change any preparation for these non-Jews who turned up. They just...
If a non-Jew literally just knocks on your door on Yantif, literally knocks on your door on Yantif and say, you know, hi, you know, a friend of yours, otherwise probably wouldn't let him in. A friend of yours, a non-Jew, walks in, hi, you know, I'm really hungry, can I have something to eat, please? So if there's food on the table or something, or food around, so you're allowed to say, okay, here, take what's here. But the idea is you're not allowed to invite, specifically invite a non-Jew to eat on Yom Kippur.
Unless
it's on Shabbos. On Shabbos is a
all right,
yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
But when it comes to also, since we're dealing with an Isra Daraisa here, so one wouldn't recommend, even if we're inviting non-from Jews, so it would not be recommended to cook specifically for not from Jews on Yantif. However, regarding the rabbinical gzera of not inviting them, lest maybe you cook for them, so that far we would not go. And Lemaisa, the general approach nowadays is that anyone who is halachically Jewish, one is allowed to invite on Yantif, if not cook for outright.
Actually, some of these, you know, heterim, they come about when the whole, Baal Tshuva movement outreach and so forth.
Well, wait a minute. But if a person is explicitly in the process of becoming frum and they're just not quite there yet, so obviously they don't have the status of a goy for these purposes. You know, they don't keep Shabbos yet. They say, I believe in God and I'm working on it and I'm not doing it out of rebellion, and if there were a big rabbi here, you know, watching me, I would never be Machal Shabbos in front of them, but I'm not quite ready to give up the texting yet, but they have their sights on doing it, and they believe in God and they believe in Shabbos, and it's not a rebellion at all, so that would be for sure allowed.
NCSY or something like that, you know.
Yeah, that's allowed. We're talking about someone who's explicitly not
from. Right. Who's not about to, who's not interested in it, period, and okay.
Who's walked away, that's the better example.
Right, or stop. I mean, people have not from relatives who are not interested in, who are, you know, not rebellious,
lots
but not interested in, you know,
well, lots of, I mean,
tshuva.
Lots of people have, you know, better than I do. I mean, I'm sure just because you're a rabbi and you see this stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of people have relatives who are either never were or are no longer from, and they have, by now they have because of they have non-Jewish relatives, non-Jewish blood relatives, because people who married out and blah, blah, blah.
No, so, if they're not Jewish, then I'll invite them. Right. That's not a question.
What exactly is the issue with a non-religious Jew? After all, there's no problem about marrying his daughter, right? His daughter's Jewish.
Yeah, but this has to do with Lachem, that Yontif is really designed for people who are Jews in good standing.
Good standing.
But again, it depends on how far you take the idea that a Jew who doesn't keep Shabbos has the status of a Goy. It depends how far you take it, really. It's not, and again, there are a lot of nuance in the exact levels of rebellion over here.
Except for, like, bushel wine, definitely. We're more mocking about wine, it seems, than about the, bushel, which seemed to be a process of derisa.
I said you shouldn't cook for them. You don't cook for not from Jews on Yontif outright. We're talking about vis-a-vis the rabbinic gzera of inviting them. That lest you cook for them. You don't have to be so worried that you would cook for them that you're not even allowed to invite them because they are shayach to Yontif in some way. So again, it's a little bit of a distinction over here, but that's what we do. Okay.
Supposing, for example, one of them isn't. So what's the deal?
What do you mean show up? If they walk in your door, then you're allowed to feed them. It's a question if you have to tell them, like, take what's here. Well, you have to, some say you don't have to say anything, whatever. If they literally show up in your door, there are ways that you're allowed to feed them. The question is inviting them in advance.
Okay.
That's a very explicit halacha that, unfortunately, many people are not aware of. It's amazing, how many people, you over here saying casually, I had my, non-Jewish coworker over at the Seder because they were, what? Beferish halacha, you're not allowed to invite non-Jews on Yontif. What are you talking about?
Even someone.
So some people. So we have a principle sometimes of mutav shiyishogig in vayu mezidin, that if something is not an explicit Torah violation, and you know that the person, we talked about this when we talked about the mitzvah of tochacha, instructing Jews to behave better if you see that they're not behaving properly. So, ordinarily you're supposed to give mussar if you see somebody not behaving properly. So the question is, sometimes it would be better to say, mutav shiyushogigin, value mezidin, that people aren't going to listen to you if you tell them that you're not allowed to invite Jews on Yontif. So this would be a situation where it might be better he would listen. Right. So that wasn't an issue. Okay.
The whole Kirov thing, Chabad and everything like that, and it's like, they have these big, Seder is a big thing to bring people in.
Right, but
and
if you...
especially you're talking about, like, Russians and other people where, Yechus is sometimes,
Right, but if you have a Seder and it's just open, so if the Chabad has a Seder and they say, we're setting 100 seats at the Seder, anybody who wants come. That's not inviting a non-Jew. You're not investigating each person in advance.
Okay, so in other words, if you have, say, university, right, and you have, here's a Seder, and you sign up in advance and so forth, you don't have to go ahead and check everybody's, yichas when they...
If you look through the guest list and you see that there's someone who's not Jewish, then you might have a problem.
But they might be a convert. I know several converts with very Irish names, and their resume includes...
Certainly, if you have a Seder and you set 100 seats and you expect, 90 people and say, everybody who wants from the university, just show up to the Seder. We have food and a place for you.
All right, let's say
that's okay.
I doubt that I wouldn't want to have a Seder university at all these days, considering the way things are like that. But I guarantee you that if you said Jews only, you would be kicked off the campus.
Yeah, I'm saying you don't need to say that. The prohibition is specifically inviting an non-Jew.
It's a private event.
I'm not saying it, but okay.
They're having an Easter sunrise service, Catholics only. What's wrong with that?
Because it's illegal.
Okay, so the mice.
It's a private event.
So I think we've covered this topic.
You're living in the past.
So in terms of the hotels, they probably do, like I said, do something along the lines of having the non-Jews own their own food, or maybe I don't know. Honestly, I can't tell you every single kula. Okay, v'chein ein ofin. You could also make the argument that if all the people doing the cooking are non-Jews, so maybe that takes it out of the din of a Jewish home or something like that.
But you're providing...
I don't know. I haven't...
If the Jews... obviously, they're cooking on behalf of Jews, so the food is like Bishul Yisrael, right?
Well, the Jew could light the fire before he enters.
I know, right. So the Goy Shashef...
Yeah.
...is cooking the food. It's Bishul Yisrael because of the involvement of the Mashgiach or something like that. So at that point, you certainly don't have an isser of Jews cooking food for non-Jews. Is a non-Jew cooking food for non-Jews? What's the big deal?
Right, also maybe it's not inviting, it's not a private thing, they just sign up, enough to investigate
yeah,
everyone
so
who's there.
Fire them. How you fire them?
No, I'm saying the guests. The guests is another simple alcohol. But yeah,
okay.
I haven't seen any tshuva exactly on how this works in a hotel, but it's certainly one of the problems with hotels on Pesach or any Yantav. Bechein ein ofen shum davar leklovim. You can't bake any treats, doggy treats for dogs, even though you're required to feed dogs. Nevertheless, dichsiv lachem velo leklovim. Same thing. You're not allowed to cook for animals, even if you're responsible for their food, because the same idea is lachem. It has to. You're only allowed to cook for Jewish people. Jewish and people both.
One question, however, it's not inviting a non-Jew on Yantif.
Mm-hmm.
Supposing you didn't cook the food on Yantif, the food was all prepared.
Doesn't matter. Gzeira. It's a gzeira. And maybe who says that you're not? Again, like I said, what if the non-Jew says, "Can I have an omelet, please? Can I have tea?" You probably don't prepare tea before Yantif.
How about tea essence?
Yantiv, you don't do that after all.
I'm
saying even
you
if
you had in mind that you really want.
No,
this.
The point is that even if you set your household up in a way where. You know, you think that you ensure that you're not going to cook on Yantif at all, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Things can always change, and you are not allowed to invite a non-Jew on Yantif, period. Which we'll discuss more in 3 mitzvahs from now, I believe. So when we have 2 days of Yantif outside of Eretz Yisrael, denolda beitza bezeh muteres bezeh. So, you have 2 days of Yantif in a row, if one was, if an egg was laid on the first day of Yantif, you're allowed to eat it on the second day of Yantif. Why? Because vis-a-vis the second day of Yantif, the first day of Yantif is a weekday.
Right.
Because again, even though really, in our book, we know that the real Daraisa day of Yantif is the first day. Nevertheless, once you're already Mimanafshach, if the first day of Yantiv is Yantiv and the second day is a weekday, so the egg was laid on the first day of Yantiv, the second day is a weekday and you're allowed to eat it. So if, and the same thing too, if the first day was a weekday and the second day is the real day of Yantiv, no, it's not, but the halacha is based on the assumption that the idea that you don't know which day of Yantiv is the real one. So if the first day of Yantif was a weekday and the second day of Yantif is the real day of Yantif, so there's no problem. You're eating an egg that was laid on a weekday on Yantif at all. Okay. Umasha nitlash min hakarka bezeh mutter bezeh, and that which was uprooted from the ground is allowed on the other one, the shtei kedushas hein. So the same thing too would apply. Part of the idea of nolad and hachana is if you have an apple that's still on the tree. So if an apple that's still on the tree, so you're not thinking of eating that yet. It's still growing. It's still on the tree. So if a non-Jew plucks the apple on the first day of Yantif, you are not allowed to eat it on the first day of Yantif because there's no hachana there. It was on the tree when Yantif was starting. But if the apple was plucked on the first day of Yantif, you're allowed to eat the apple on the second day of Yantif because of the same idea that vis-a-vis the second day of Yantif, so the first day of Yantif can be treated like a weekday. Masha eino kein b'shnei yamim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah. This is not the case on Rosh Hashanah. That on Yantif of Rosh Hashanah, so we have the idea that Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days are like Yoma Arichta. They're like one long day. So what does that mean exactly?
Everything is a mitzvah d'oraisa both days then, right?
Not that far.
Really? No.
So, no, the midoraisa is not 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Midoraisa is only 1 day of Rosh Hashanah.
So in other words, wait a second. So that means that it really is more like, you know, it really is like more in like the second day of Yantav and Mongolia's then. There are things you can do on the second day which you have coolas for them?
Yes. So the things like that, like burying a dead body and you taking medicines, those apply on the second day of Rosh Hashanah as well. That's true.
Okay, all
right. Right. Those do apply on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. But for these things, it's considered like one holiness that something that was plucked on the first day is not allowed on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And something, as I said, an egg that was born late on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is not allowed to be consumed on the second day of Rosh Hashanah.
Wait a second, but you can't prepare on the first day of Rosh Hashanah for the second day. You can't, you know.
That's correct, because according to the majority of poskim, this principle that the 2 days are like one long day applies in the direction only of stringency and not in leniency.
Oh, okay.
However, there is, for your awareness, not that you should do this, but for your awareness, there is a shita that holds that the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are, it goes even in the direction of leniency, that one is allowed to prepare on the first day of Rosh Hashanah for the second day of Rosh Hashanah, at least things that would, like, the preparation is only prohibited midrabanan, even if you're not allowed to cook on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, which it would be a deraisa for the second day of Rosh Hashanah. You might be allowed to, like, make the beds, something like that, on the start preparing the salads, something like that, on the first day of Rosh Hashanah for the second day of Rosh Hashanah, but we don't normally...
make the beds?
Yeah.
Didn't you make them when you get up in the morning?
You make them when you get up in the morning for the day.
Right. One of the classical examples of hachana is that you're making the beds, because in the olden days it wasn't like an automatic thing. It was just, you know, something, the bed needed to be prepared for sleeping. So, in other words, if you make it on Rosh Hashanah after the first day afternoon, you'd be explicitly preparing it for sleeping that night, as opposed to
what?
Right. Nowadays, when you're just making it look nice, so when you walk into the room, you don't say, "Oh, this is such a mess. I want to see my bed made so nicely." Mm-hmm. You do that in the morning, so then that's okay. That's not what I was referring to. This is why, again, I don't want to give you too much away from what I'm planning to talk about on Rosh Hashanah between Mincha and Ma'ariv, but this is why. This is why, according to some shittas, one does not make a Shechiyanu, the second night of Rosh Hashanah in Kiddush, because it's all considered like one extended day of holiness. The Shechiyanu, the first day, covers the second day. So the shittas that disagree with that, obviously that's how we hold. We hold that you do make a Shechiyanu the second night. They hold that this thing of being one long extended holiness applies only to things like the apple that was plucked on the first day or the egg that was laid on the first day, but it doesn't mean they're literally one unit, right? So they're 2 days. So lemaisa, you have to make a Shechiyanu on both days, and the reason being given is mimanavshach. It depends how you look at the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. If the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are based on a doubt as to which is the correct day of Rosh Hashanah, so obviously you have to make Shechiyanu both days, the same way as in any yantif, if you make Shechiyanu both days. And if it's based on the minog that they did sometimes when the Beis HaMikdash was standing and they had the Sanhedrin, so sometimes when witnesses came too late in the day, on the first day that could potentially be Rosh Hashanah, so they declared that, yes, we're keeping the first day, even though we know that tomorrow is really going to be Rosh Hashanah. Nevertheless, we're still keeping the first day as Rosh Hashanah, and just so people should get used to the idea that you have to keep the first potential day that could be Rosh Hashanah as Rosh Hashanah, even though the real Rosh Hashanah is the second day. So in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when they used to keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, sometimes, which was the real day of Rosh Hashanah? It was the second day. Mm-hmm. It was the second day of Rosh Hashanah that was the real day. So that's why, based on the fact that either way you look at it, either it's a suffix as to which day is the correct day, or we're modeling ourselves on the old minag where the second day was the real day of Rosh Hashanah. So either way you look at it, you have to make a Shechiyanu on the second night. And that indeed is how we pass, and they have to make Shechiyanu on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, even though there were shittas that held that you don't make Shechiyanu on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, because Lamaisa, we treat the first day as the real day, and we hold of this idea that it's one long holiness and not really a suffix. So there's different ways of looking at it. There were Rishonim who held that you only make Shechiyanu on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, which is why we try to satisfy all our shitas by making Shechiyanu on something else the second night of Rosh Hashanah, and having in mind that the bracha of Shechiyanu and Kiddush should go on that as well. So it gets you out of the Shaila Bracha Vatola. Okay, if you're not really supposed to be making Shechiyanu, it's a hefsek. You shouldn't be making a Shechiyanu there, but the truth is, we really paskin that even if you don't have access to something Shechiyanu worthy, you would still make Shechiyanu on the second night of Rosh Hashanah anyway. And there's still much more to discuss about this, but we'll save you for anybody who wants to come to my shir between Mincha Ma'ariv, between the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. There's much more to discuss about that. I don't think that you just the little taste was the be-all and end-all of what I'm gonna talk about. V'yaser prateh rabim. The rest of the details are many. Yizbaru kulan baruka b'masechta b'nuya alzeh. He maseches yantif, which we call maseches beitza in the Gemara. But nagiz b'chal makom v'chol zman b'zecharim u'nikevos, the males and females. V'over alzeh v'asam alacham in lochos asurus b'yantif meizid chayim malkos. That if you do something on yantif that is prohibited to be done midaraisa on that day, one receives the penalty of Malkus. It's a regular Isser Lav. There's no Misas Bezdin. That's why the Poskim say also that we have a principle that if you're Mechal Shabbos, that means you should be treated essentially like a non-Jew. That being Mechal Shabbos is completely undermines your status as an upstanding member of the Jewish community, which does not apply, according to simple understanding, it does not apply to Yontif. If you're Mechal Yontif, you keep Shabbos. Keep Shabbos, but you're Mechal Yontif, so that does not reduce your status to that of a non-Jew, because the prohibition, it's considered much less severe. Think about it. Shabbos or Chayiv Skila. Shabbos or Chayiv Skila, it's the sign that we believe in God and that God created the world and took us out of Egypt. So Shabbos is the sign in terms of manifestations of different times of the covenant between God and the Jewish people and our belief in the existence of God. But Yontif, even though it's very stringent, it's not on that level. It's only an Isser Malkus, just like any other regular negative commandment. Again, it's not, lashes are not so fun, but okay, but it's not as Chamor HaShavis.
And so on and so forth. Right?
If you're secretive about it and you're embarrassed from the rest of the Jewish community, that means you still have a religious feeling about
That's right.
Yeah.